Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
A local school in our area had a swatting incident today. I'll tell you about that. Pete Hegseth, what he would do with the military industrial complex and TikTok. Really good question asked about the potential forced sale of TikTok. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. It is our fourth and final hour on the show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Been great to be with you, by the way. Now that I'm out of the hospital and I have my PICC line in and I'll be doing IV antibiotics for the next 4 weeks, I have a staph infection in my foot. They had to operate on me. Thanks to the great doctors and nurses over at Cooper. They did a great job. But yeah, I was in the hospital for 7 days, which is insane. One of those days we actually did the show from the hospital, but I never would have imagined that it would have turned into a staph infection. And there you go. So they had to operate on it while I was there and give me just a ton of antibiotics. And then they said I could go home last night. I left the hospital at about, about 7 o'clock or so last night after the show was over. And here I am. So at 8 o'clock tonight, I have a call with a nurse, a virtual call. She's going to show me how to properly do my IV antibiotics. And I'll be doing that for the next 4 weeks. As part of the doctor's orders, which, you know, I'm not very good at following, I'm not supposed to be ambulatory on my foot, which means I'm not supposed to walk on it or really go anywhere. They gave me a walker, and I got a scooter thing that I ride around the house in, put my leg up on it, and I scoot around. It's kind of fun, actually. But I am doing Jimmy Fallon's show Saturday night in New York, Fox News Saturday night, this coming Saturday at 10 p.m. on Saturday night. We have a live studio audience. I'm not missing it. Show must go on. But that's easy because they send a car for me and I can just kind of hobble into the car and hobble out and get onto the set. And then, you know, that I'm not worried about that. It's more about the inauguration, which I really want to go to. But there'd be a lot of moving parts to that. A lot of walking around, a lot of, you know, security and all the other things. So I'm not so sure about that one yet, but you know, we'll see how it goes. I hate missing anything. I really do. And a lot of other people might have taken today off to recover, but not me. I said, let's get right to it. In fact, I would have done the show every day if I could have. The first day I went into the hospital was a Wednesday, and it was because, or it was a Tuesday, actually. I was getting chills, and I was worried I had an infection, and they took me into the emergency department. They said my white blood cell count was not elevated that much, nor were my inflammation markers. So they weren't. They didn't know if I had an infection, but then they did a CT scan of my foot, and they saw there was an infection there in the bone. And by the way, I may still have an infection in the bone, which would be very serious. They won't know that until Saturday, I think, Friday or Saturday, because it takes about a week to get those results back. So we'll see what they say on that. But for now, it's a staph infection in the foot. And so on Wednesday, we did the show. On Thursday, they operated and cleaned out the wound and took out the implant that was in there that the other podiatrist, the lesser podiatrist, not affiliated with Cooper, put in. It got infected. And then I spent Thursday and Friday basically on painkillers and antibiotics, just trying to recover from the surgery, which was, it was very painful. All of it was painful. Didn't think I could do the show. Well, Thursday, I didn't go into surgery until, I think, noon. On Friday, I really wanted to do the show, but I was high as a kite. Just didn't think it would be a good idea. And then the weekend, I was hoping I'd get out of there. Actually, Friday morning, the doctor came in and said he was sending me home, but then infectious disease overruled him and said, we discovered a couple new infections we need to further analyze. So I had to stay till yesterday. And then it was just a matter of if I did the show yesterday, I wouldn't be able, timing-wise, to work it out to ensure I get out of there by 3 o'clock. And so I just said, I'll just take the day off. And thanks to Mary for jumping in, and Opelka and Rooney, too, for covering for me while I was out. And speaking of Rooney, he's got a big job. He'll be on the show tomorrow, I hope. He and Mike Donahue, two of them, have a new gig. But I'll let them tell you about it. But it's very, very cool stuff. Good stuff. Happy for them. My buddy Mike Donahue is the chairman of the Cape May County Republican Party. Anyway, so here I am. And I got a couple days left of painkillers, and then I'll be out. And we have to do this stupid IV antibiotic for 4 to 6 weeks. And hopefully it doesn't get any worse. I have to look for the signs to look for are chills and fever, confusion, which I have often, lightheadedness, and just general delirium. If I have any of those things, I have to go back to the hospital. All right? So that's where we are. Never would have imagined 7 days in the hospital over a freaking infection. But these staph infections are pretty serious. In fact, when the doctor operated on my foot, he sat me down. Well, I was in the OR, so I was about to go back there. Me and Bridget were sitting there. I had the IV line in with the they give you like the pre-anesthesia cocktail. And he said to me, he goes, today is about saving your foot. All right? Today's about saving your foot. I said, okay. And that's what they were talking about was because, you know, if these things spread, then in some cases they have to amputate, you know. But we think he thinks he saved it. Dr. Malilly, great guy. What a terrific guy. And hopefully that's where we are. But that's what happened and that's everything. And here I am. So I'll keep you posted as we go through this recovery, but it is a bummer. And I it's my right foot, too, so I can't drive for a while. Not that I can really go anywhere. Like I said, they sent a walker to the house, and I got this little scooter thingy, but you know, I can't put any pressure on it whatsoever. I can't even be in a boot because they don't want me putting any pressure on it whatsoever. So there you go. Today, speaking of King Philip the Unaccountable, his royal ruggedness, today he gave his State of the State address. We'll talk about that tomorrow, and we'll get a reaction on from one of our buddies in the state legislature to come on and talk about it. There was a swatting incident today at Lenape High School in South Jersey, and a friend of mine whose daughter goes to school there texted me about this. So swatting is when they call the police and they say that there's something serious there, like a bomb or a gun or something like that, and they send out a SWAT team. And it happens to people, and sometimes this happens to people who are famous or they're influencers, sometimes politicians. This happens to them. If somebody calls the police and says that they heard the person has a gun or is suicidal or something, and then a big police presence responds. And it's a real serious incident, swatting, because they come guns blazing. I mean, literally come guns blazing. And I think it's one of the most awful things anybody could ever do in life. I really do. Because you have officers on edge, you've got innocent people there who are subjected to this, people are panicked, the officers are going in expecting the worst, and then all of a sudden, you know, your house or your office or whatever is surrounded by heavily armed officers. I mean, it's a recipe for disaster, and in many cases, it has been disaster. And so at Lenape School today, Lenape High School, they had this happen, and I guess what she said to me is a friend of hers, her daughter, it was on police lockdown. They had 25 police cars, barricaded the school. At least 15 cops with rifles entered the building. They were in lockdown for almost 3 hours. One of the children had to relieve themselves in a water bottle, and it was all a swatting incident. And the school was sending out, you know, text messages to the parents today. It's obvious it's a big news story in our area. Lenape High School in Medford, 2-hour lockdown on Tuesday morning. The principal, Tony Catini, this is from NJ.com, was sent several messages to parents between 11:10 a.m. and 1:22 p.m., the last saying that police had checked the building and found no threats. The lockdown was then changed to shelter in place. Earlier, the principal sent a message informing parents that hallways, bathrooms, and lockers had been checked and that police were checking classrooms. There have been no reports of danger. They said all students and staff are safe. The Burlington County Prosecutor's Office referred questions to the Medford Police, who said in a statement that there was a, quote, report of an alleged incident of violence at the school and that the threat appeared to be unfounded. Police in neighboring Mount Laurel set up a parent staging location at St. Anthony's Coptic Orthodox Church. A Mount Laurel police spokesman declined to comment on the events at Lenape High School. School officials couldn't immediately be reached. Video recorded from a vehicle by a passerby outside Let It Be High School showed multiple police cars in front of the school. More than 1,900 students attend the high school, one of the four high schools in the Lenape Regional High School District. So, I mean, just a terrible, terrible thing to happen. I feel so bad for those kids, the teachers, the cops, everybody. It's just an awful, awful, horrible situation to have happen. Absolutely horrible. Is that, the people that do this, I hope they, you know, you find out who did this, throw the freaking book at them, as far as I'm concerned. Throw the book at them. You're diverting police resources, number one. But you're even worse than that. You're escalating police resources where they sent they're going in assuming the worst, in this case, assuming a school shooting or something. So now their adrenaline's high. I mean, it is just like I said, a recipe for disaster. Horrible thing to happen. My sympathy goes out to every student, parent, teacher, faculty member at Lenape High School today, and every cop on the scene and everybody who had to respond. Just I'm sorry you had to go through this horrible thing. I hope they find out who did this. I hope they throw the book at this person. I really do. On a positive note today, Pete Hegseth had his confirmation hearing. I thought he did a really great job. I do want to, before I get to what he said, though, I want to share with you a couple audio clips from the Supreme Court case regarding TikTok. Now, the forced sale of TikTok, I've told you this before, I do not support this in any way, shape, or form. And I think that too often conservatives get distracted by the C word being children. Or maybe you're thinking of the other C word, China. But either way, this is a way for the Democrats, the government, to have control over all of social media. And that was slipped by that Democrat congressman from Massachusetts, Jake Auchincloss, who said that about TikTok. He said, we have to get it as a U.S. company so that we can regulate it. And that's the big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VanariaDental.com. Two locations to serve you, Cinnaminson and Woodbury. Go see Dr. Mike for your perfect smile. And remember, he is my dentist, my family's dentist, too. Everybody in the Zioli family goes to see Dr. Mike. So reach out to him today and make that appointment. Start 2025 off with a great smile. Here is Supreme Court Justice... TikTok's lawyer, Noel Francisco, who says the government has no valid interest in preventing foreign propaganda. This is Cut 17. Take a listen.
This content-based from beginning to end. It applies only to social media platforms that have user-generated content, except for business, product, and travel reviews. Within that content-based universe, it singles out a single speaker for uniquely harsh treatment. And it does so because the government fears that China could, in the future, indirectly pressure TikTok to disseminate foreign misinformation and propaganda. Finally, the act can't satisfy any standard of scrutiny. The government has no valid interest in preventing foreign propaganda. And its fallback that it seeks merely to prevent covertness makes no sense, since that could be addressed with a risk disclosure. The government's real target, rather, is the speech itself. Its fear that Americans, even if fully informed, could be persuaded by Chinese misinformation. That, however, is a decision that the First Amendment leaves to the people. Given that the government's data security rationale cannot independently sustain the act, it is also grossly under-inclusive and ignores the most obvious, less restrictive alternative, simply banning TikTok Incorporated from sharing any sensitive user data with anyone.
Now, remember a couple things here. Your sensitive user data is constantly being shared on the internet all day long by American-based companies. That's why I use DuckDuckGo, for example. But, I mean, Google, Amazon, all these companies buy and sell you. You are the product, your data all the time. And when it comes to propaganda, I'll just say this. You know, this notion of foreign propaganda, which is what we heard was the reason why Trump won the election, because Russia used foreign propaganda online and all the other things. I mean, the argument that TikTok should be banned because of foreign propaganda. Well, if any foreign country is able to disseminate propaganda on an American-based platform, then theoretically, if you go down that road, the government can ban that platform too. Because it's not about the fact that it's owned by a foreign company. If the government says, hey, look, we have an interest here in banning foreign propaganda, but you can put foreign propaganda on Facebook, you can put foreign propaganda on X, Twitter, well, then the government's going to come back and say, well, then we can regulate those platforms, all in the name of keeping you safe from foreign propaganda. So, you know, if you fall for this notion of we can force the sale of TikTok because of foreign propaganda, but if foreign propaganda, which we know it does exist, it is shown on foreign on domestic based platforms. We know that. Then the government, then you've given them a compelling right to come in now and regulate speech online, regulate those companies. And that's what they want. All in the name of keeping you safe from foreign propaganda. The point that the lawyer makes there. But I would have made that point better than he did, because I think that that ultimately is the biggest problem here. If you fall to this notion of foreign propaganda and you go, oh, my God, you know, this is the worst thing out there. We got to be protected from it because of the consequences could be X, Y or Z. But I can convincingly prove to you that foreign propaganda exists on Reddit, Facebook, X, whatever it is. Well, you've just now given the government green light. Regulate speech, take down content, have a disinformation board to make sure that foreign disinformation is not on those domestic platforms. You've given the government all kinds of power. And that is entirely what they want. All in the name of keeping you safe from speech. But the other problem is that I have a right to hear foreign propaganda. I'll give you an example. During COVID, I was told that what the Swiss were doing was not true. It wasn't working. When they did the Great Barrington Declaration, they looked at Switzerland, and they looked at Sweden, and they looked at a number of other countries in Europe and how they were handling COVID and the fact that they had no lockdowns there. And they said, well, this proves that lockdowns don't work. Now, if you take some of that information and you put it onto domestic media platforms, you could argue that that's foreign disinformation, because I'm sure that people in the Biden administration who were yelling at Facebook back then. Remember the clip I played for you of Zuckerberg telling Joe Rogan, you had Biden administration officials coming in and yelling at them and saying, you got to take down this information. Well, if somebody in Sweden is putting out all this data showing that lockdowns are completely counterintuitive, wind up actually causing greater harm to society. Well, the government's got to keep me safe from that foreign propaganda, because that if I believe that and I violate lockdown, well, I could die. So again, I would counter that by saying, or I could take that data, that quote unquote foreign propaganda, and I could use it to advocate policy that is reasonable and makes sense. It's like how when Dr. Nicole Sapphire came on my show during COVID and she was pointing out the data of the COVID vaccine with young people in Europe and saying we should not be pushing this 2-vaccine schedule for kids back to back in this manner. It needs more study, needs more research, et cetera. She's basing that on foreign data, which you could argue, and I'm sure people in the Biden administration did, was foreign propaganda. So one person's foreign propaganda is another person's data that is used for a compelling argument. You know, whatever foreign propaganda was put out there to say that Russia blew up the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, we know that the United States of America did it. I believe Seymour Hersh is reporting on this. But whatever data he was able to gather for his story came from foreign sources. You could argue that's foreign propaganda. So you give the government a compelling reason to shut that down. The other part of this, too, is that you've got a lot of other entities that are owned by foreign countries, foreign governments. This is the point that Justice Neil Gorsuch makes here in his argument. Cut 18.
It's very hard to engage in counter speech when you don't know, because someone is secretly manipulating the platform behind the scenes. And in particular, what the PRC has the capability to do is simply silence American voices.
A newspaper owned by a foreign company and a foreign government. You wouldn't know when it's exercising editorial discretion about this article or that article or how it's doing it. So maybe we just need to shut down the Oxford University Press in America, or you pick it, any other foreign-owned Politico, I was told today, is owned by Germany. So that would all be okay on your theory, so long as Congress designates that country a foreign adversary?
We are not asking the court to articulate bright-line rules to govern all kinds of hypothetical situations.
I understand that, but I am testing your argument.
Yes, and what I want to acknowledge is that sometimes the court has recognized that a speaker-based preference might reflect a content-based preference. And in the context of ownership of a newspaper, for example, in part because a newspaper is a one-way channel of communication and is generally understood to represent to some extent its publisher's views, maybe the court would more readily infer that a regulation targeting that is actually aiming to target content. But I don't think the court could draw the same conclusion here.
I'm not talking about the compelling interest or any of that. I'm talking about the tailoring. And you're saying we have no alternative but to stop this speech altogether. We can't rely on disclosure. But you say that wouldn't apply to Politico or to the Oxford University Press because?
In the circumstance where you have a newspaper that is understood to reflect its publisher's views, then you might think that disclosure would be a more adequate remedy there because it's not just holding itself out as a forum for speech between other people. I think social media platforms do raise distinct interests in this regard because what people think when they're engaging with TikTok is that it's organically feeding them videos based on the recommendation engine. And if actually China is behind the scenes engaging in this kind of covert operation, it does prevent a distinct national security.
If there is a distinct national security issue, you deal with that by not allowing government employees to use the app. But remember something, and this is to the other point here that I think that Justice Kavanaugh or Gorsuch is making, which is that, but is it security or is it speech and propaganda? Because you could have foreign entities putting out propaganda and speech all the time, and you could argue that that's a threat to national security. I mean, it's all in the eye of the beholder. If you've got, let's use the Sweden example again. If you've got all these Swedish people putting out videos saying how wonderful life is without lockdown, and our government says that that's foreign propaganda because it's on social media and it's not subject to the editorial whims of a newspaper. Well, okay, now you've got a problem now because the government says we don't like that. That's a national security threat because we need everybody to be good little boys and girls locked down in their homes during a pandemic. Or you put out the information from Europe right now, which is turning around and banning transgender surgeries and showing all these horrible things that are happening to kids as a result of puberty blockers and the mutilation of children. And the government turns around and goes, that's a national security threat to the United States of America, to our children, because we believe that these LGBTQ+ IA, every letter of the alphabet, children will be triggered and harmed by this information. You got to be real careful with this national security crap when it comes to speech, by the way. Oh, and here's something else, too. Matt just sent this to me. There's the number one downloaded app right now is not actually TikTok. It's Red Note, which is also owned by a Chinese-based company. And there's a report that TikTok will just accept the ban, which could potentially happen, and that they hope that Trump will be able to influence a decision reversal when he takes office. Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg are both reporting that if the app is banned, ByteDance has considered selling TikTok to Elon Musk. Well, they should, but beyond that, I worry about Elon Musk owning TikTok or owning X. I do. I worry about that. Someone the other day, I think it was Steve Bannon, who apparently hates Elon Musk, was saying that Elon Musk is South African and they're the biggest racists on the planet. Why do we let this South African have so much control over our information and blah, blah, blah? I don't know. I mean, you could make the argument that Elon Musk should have known X because he's a foreigner. I just don't want to go down this road. I think going down this road is incredibly dangerous. So I know we got to take a break, but I think that they prey on our fears to regulate speech and give the government more power over us using this national security straw man argument all the time. And we have seen how that only benefits the government. It doesn't benefit the people. It always benefits the people in power. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come right back. But I want to tell you about my buddy, Dr. Mike Venaria. He is a great dentist. He really is the master of dental implants. And, you know, when I tell you the whole Zioli family goes to him, I got to give Mama Zioli props. She's the one that discovered him for our family. But people have been going to Dr. Mike for generations. They love the guy. And with two offices to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury, make your appointment today. If you've been putting off getting that beautiful smile, start the new year off right. You'll love the fact that there's great music in the office. Everybody who works there is terrific. They're compassionate. They care about you and your smile, and they're going to give you a great smile. And going to the dentist is very healthy for you. You got to go, baby. You got to be careful, baby. If you've had complicated dental work, get a second opinion. Or if you've had an estimate, I should say, get a second opinion with Dr. Mike Veneria. All right? VeneriaDental.com. And I was just talking to him recently about stuff. You'll like his like-minded views on things. He's a great conversationalist. I think you'll enjoy his perspective on life. And people ask him all the time, is Rich really my dentist? Yes, he is my dentist. I mean, is Rich my dentist? Has Rich really come here? Yes, I really do go see Dr. Mike Veneria. He is my dentist. And in fact, while I was in the hospital, Bridget brought me my toothbrush, which Dr. Mike gave me the other day. And it says Dr. Mike Veneria on it. So there you go. That's the proof. Also, the proof is that people have seen me in his office many times. VeneriaDental.com. Dr. Mike Veneria. VeneriaDental.com.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Damn right. And Pete Hegseth is an American soldier, and he did great today, I think, bringing the warrior mindset back to the Department of Defense. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. There's some really exciting news about the Travis Manion Foundation. And among other things, it's a pleasure and honor to welcome back to the show my friend Ryan Manion. Ryan, welcome to the show. I should have invited you to do the show on video with me today. I wasn't thinking, but I am wearing my Travis Manion Foundation hat.
I love it. I love it, Rich.
Yeah. I was in the hospital. I got out of the hospital, and I'm just, my mind is still not all there. I got a PICC line in I got a staph infection. So I can't shower, so I threw on the TMF hat since you were coming on the show. Figured that's how we do it. And I was wearing my Travis Manion Foundation T-shirt. But I don't think you can do the T-shirt and hat combo, Ryan. I think that looks a little nerdy. What do you think? What are your thoughts on that?
No, I totally disagree with you. I think... Yeah. The T-shirt, sweatshirt, hat combo is, when you're wearing our brand, it works.
All right. Then I will do that for tomorrow's show. I'll do the hat and the T-shirt. Maybe even the sweatshirt, too. Why not? You know what I mean?
There you go. There you go.
Ryan, of course, is the chief executive officer of the Travis Manion Foundation. Her brother Travis, of course, foundation is named after him. And some really exciting news. Now, before we get to that exciting news, I wanted to get your take on your friend, Pete Hegseth, of course, nominated by President Trump to be the next Secretary of Defense. You know him well. I thought he handled himself today with real poise and courage.
I think he did a great job. In fact, it's interesting because I just got this message, which I thought was so interesting before coming on here from somebody that I know well. And she wrote, you know, I wasn't sure about him, watched the whole hearing, and now I'm like, let's go. And I said, I told you so. Like, I knew that he would step into these hearings being very well prepared, and he did just that. So I was very impressed with the way that he was able to, answer the questions that came from the Democrats, and they went hard. And in fact, I think over, you know, a lot of these presumptive questions of like, what if it was wild, the line of questioning. It was like, Rich, if you killed someone, do you think that would disqualify you from being Secretary of Defense? Well, of course it would. Like, why are you asking this question? It was wild.
Right. Yeah. If you skinned a man alive and then ate him, do you think that would disqualify you from being Secretary of Defense?
Like, it was so crazy. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
But he did handle himself well. And I thought just talking about his own story. And look, a lot of people can relate where you've struggled in life and you turned your life around and came back from it. I give him credit for that. To my mind, that's not something you mark the guy negatively for. You say that's a great story of courage.
I mean, yeah. And I think it's so hypocritical for us to judge people on, you know, one specific event in their life. And frankly, every one of those senators sitting there know full well that if they were judged on one bad day, right, none of them would be in office right now.
Right.
I think it was Blumenthal, he was like, how many people currently serve in the United States Army? And he said, 425,000. He said, what about the Navy? And he said, $375,000. He goes, no, it's $372,000. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I mean, it was like, I got you. You're off by $3,000. And it was quite something, but he held his composure, which he needed to do. And that was really important. That was something I was a little bit nervous about. But he held his composure really well. And what was really cool for me is that, you know, when he ran Concerned Veterans of America, he was doing a lot for my dad when my dad was running for Congress. You know, he showed up in Bucks County with a group of veterans. They were door knocking all over. And so we were with him from the very beginning and reading all the testimonials. They, you know, people, I know Jody Ernst read a letter. There was a few other senators that read letters from people that he had previously served with and worked with at Concerned Veterans of America. And it was like going down memory lane because I was hearing these names and I was like, oh my God, I remember that guy. So it was fun for me. I mean, it was the most interesting hearing that I've ever listened to, for sure, because I felt so connected to it.
That's really cool, Ryan Mannion. That's very, very cool. And you'll be buds with the Secretary of Defense, which is, you know, I mean, hey, listen, we can get a nice tour. I mean, I know you've had tours of the Pentagon before, but I haven't. So you can hook me up. That'll be great.
There you go. I can make that happen.
But I wanted to get you on the show today because there's some just absolutely outstanding, tremendous news to honor your brother and really to honor the entire Mannion family. And it's just incredible stuff. When I first saw this last week, I had chills. I really did. I had chills when I heard this story about this. And I said, I got to get Ryan on the show to talk about this. And it's just a really, really big deal. The United States Navy, the next amphibious transport ship will be the USS
Travis Mannion.
Unbelievable. That's fantastic. That is unbelievable. Yeah. The USS Travis Mannion. Ryan, I have chills just hearing you say it right now.
I mean, I still have chills. It's so extraordinary to think that that his legacy will live on through a warship. And I know for my dad, I mean, there's nothing. There's nothing else that, you know, I mean, it's the Mecca, right? It's just like my son is going to have a ship named after him. And so, you know, we really say, and one of the things my dad talked about when he spoke at the announcement, that the Secretary of the Navy, when he announced the ship on Friday, was that, you know, it's such a tremendous honor, certainly for Travis and for my family, but it's also a tremendous honor to this post 9/11 generation, you know, being recognized in this way. And like, this ship is for all of them. You know, this Travis's name continues to kind of be this beacon for all of our service members who have served, and most especially those who have sacrificed. And so, gosh, you know, we learned about it, actually, cool story, we learned about it at the Army-Navy game. So at the Army-Navy game, the Secretary of the Navy's chief of staff came up to me at our tailgate and said, SecNav would like to see you today. And I said, oh, well, here's where I'm sitting. Like, because they normally walk around and visit people during the game. I said, please have him stop by. And he said, well, I'd like to bring you to him. And I was like, oh, you know, I kind of hemmed and hawed. Like, I didn't want, you know, I was like, well, I don't. And he was like, it's very important you see the Secretary of the Navy today. And I was like, ooh, something's going on. And he said, we need your father as well. So they brought us down. We walk into a room. It's Secretary of the Navy, the Commandant of the Marine Corps, the Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps. And they share with us that they are naming the ship after Travis. And we, you know, it's the first quarter of the game. We're like blown away. Oh, my gosh, this is unbelievable. And then they say, and by the way, you can't tell anyone. And we're like, okay, you know, and we're going back to all the people we're sitting with like, okay. And so they said, we will make it public on January 10th, please, at the Naval Academy where Travis went to school, please feel free to invite anyone you want. And we're like, well, what are we supposed to tell them? They're like, just tell them it's a special announcement from the Secretary of the Navy. And that's what we did. We had 325 people, along with a ton of midshipmen from the Naval Academy, show up. Secretary of the Navy made the announcement, and it was just like, it was... indescribable. What, like, the you know, chills the whole time. And so for me, you know, we were at the Naval Academy. Not only did SecNav speak, but General Dumford, the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, my dad, and then my daughter, actually, who's a plebe at the Naval Academy, got up and spoke about her Uncle Travis. And wow, that for me, and I think for a lot of people in the room, was really something. And so it was just, it was an incredible day, and it's such an incredible honor, and you know, looking forward to watching this ship come to life.
Oh, Ryan, that is tremendous. I mean, that really, the USS Travis Mannion. Ryan Mannion's on the phone with me right now. It's great to have her on the show as we talk about this the incredible honor. Two things that you mentioned that I wanted to touch on. Number one, your daughter speaking as a plebe at the United States Naval Academy about her uncle. And tell us a little bit about what she said in her remarks.
You know, her remarks I remember the beginning of her remarks, and she put it together herself, and she said, "Mom, I don't want to speak long, you know, I mean, she's an 18-year-old kid." And it was funny because I said to her, "I understand, you're going to have the Secretary of the Navy there, you're the former chairman of the Joint Chief, and actually Admiral Mullen, who was chairman of the Joint Chiefs before Dumford was there. I'm like, I understand there's going to be a lot of people there. And, you know, senior leaders there." And she said, "Mom, I don't care about that. There's going to be I think the men's lacrosse team's coming, you know?" So it was this idea of, like, speaking in front of her peers. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense, right? But, you know, she opened it up and she said, you know, "To many, Travis Mannion was a friend, a brother, a son, a teammate. You know, to me, he was Uncle Travis. And Travis died when she was 10 months old." And she talked a lot about, you know, while she doesn't have vivid memories of him, like, he kind of set the course and the tone for what she has gone on to do. And then she gave, like, love and homage to, there were so many of my brother's classmates there and those he served in the Marine Corps with. And she, like, thanked them because she said, like, they had stepped up and played a role, you know, and kind of stepped in as big brothers for her, you know, over the course of her life. And so, I mean, gosh, everybody was in tears, and it was such a beautiful moment. And, you know, and then the Secretary of the Navy said he named her as the sponsor of the ship. So every Navy ship has a female ship sponsor, which is considered the, you know, the permanent member of the crew. And so her, myself, and my other daughter, Honor, were named as the ship sponsors. And the SecNav said, you know, "I believe, I'm going to go back and make sure, but I think she may be the only midshipman in our nation's history that has ever been named as a ship sponsor." And so, wow. Yeah, that was pretty cool. And, you know, and you think about it, like, the importance of what this means to the post 9/11 generation, like, from the Naval Academy, the last Naval Academy graduate that had a ship named after them was John McCain. Right. Hmm. So you think about all the kids there in the brigade right now, like, for them to get this, like, relevant and relatable hero, you know, and, like, these kids are going to be getting aboard the USS Mannion in 5 years. And it means something, and it's significant that we do things like this to pass that down from generation to generation, these names and these stories. And so, again, so, so special.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's incredible. Now, in terms of the 9/11 generation, that you bring that up, that aspect of it too, and that's really important for people to think about. Your brother represented a generation of people who served our country after 9/11, many of whom were inspired to go, like your brother, because of 9/11, and then and for so many who gave their lives in the war on terror, and it's so important that we don't forget that, but also the sacrifice of people who said America was attacked. I want to serve. I want to go now and fight on behalf of those who couldn't, you know, and if not me, then whom? Because, right, if not me, then who? Because I got to go and I got to step up now and I got to do something. That's a really incredible testament as well. And important for, like, my kids to learn about the people that watched as America was attacked on September the 11th, 2001, and then turned around and said, well, we're going to go and avenge the 3,000 souls who were killed by just a pure act of evil.
Yeah. And then, you know, you think about it. Like, I think about, you know, Travis, like, if you would ask Travis, like, what's your favorite show? It would have been like Band of Brothers, right? I just had Jocko on my podcast and I was like, favorite movie. He's like, I don't have a favorite movie, but Band of Brothers and the Pacific. Right. And that's this post 9/11 generation. Like, they grew up learning the stories of our World War II heroes, of those men that stepped up when their country needed them most. And like, we have to continue telling these stories. And right now we have an entire generation, 20-year war, and we owe it to our next generation to pass forward these stories, because if we don't teach them, it dies there, you know? And, you know, I think about my 10-year-old son, you know, your kids, like, they need to understand the importance of what it means to step up, to serve, to defend your country. And, you know, when your country needs it the most, and who knows when that next time will be.
An amphibious transport ship. So give us an idea of what that's like, how big it's going to be, and when you think it'll I don't know what the appropriate term is, when it'll launch. Is that right?
It's when it'll commission.
Commission. Okay.
Yeah. So how big it is, it's huge. You know, I have a rendering of it. I'll text it over to you when we get off. But
all right,
I mean,
cool.
it's a huge warship. So it's huge. The cool thing about a Navy amphib ship, and the reason that they specifically picked this one, it's an LPD, is a San Antonio class LPD. It carries Marines. And so that there obviously big significance in the fact that Travis was a Marine. And so, you know, it's in you know, it responds quickly to action all over the world. And it transports Marines, it transports Navy SEALs, like elite fighting forces, to where they need to go. And so no better ship to name after Travis than that one. And takes about 5 years for a Navy ship to come to life. And so the first thing that happens, you know, kind of halfway through, is the christening, where you go and you smash the bottle of champagne. That's when it hits the water. And then about 2 years after that, they'll commission the ship. I'm hoping, I'm going to do everything in my power to get that ship commissioned in Philadelphia so we can have, like, the biggest party Philadelphia has ever seen.
Oh, my God. That would be incredible, Ryan Mannion. We got to make that happen.
Yeah.
We got to ask the president himself. We got to make it happen.
Yes. Yeah. You're going to have to help me with that. We're going to need all hands on deck to get that ship commissioned in Philadelphia.
Oh, absolutely. That will be the party of our lives. No doubt about it. Well, congratulations. And I mean, just congratulations to your whole family. It's amazing. When I saw the news of this, like I said, I had chills. I was so excited for you, for everyone at the Travis Mannion Foundation, the incredible work that's done there every single day on behalf of our veterans. And, I'm so happy. Of something that's so tragic, of being a Gold Star sister, and for your dad, a Gold Star father, but to turn this into something that is just so inspiring and monumental for generations to come, is just absolutely a profound testament to Travis Mannion and the entire Mannion family. So congratulations, my friend.
Rich, thank you so much. And I'll tell you what, along with that Travis Mannion Foundation hat, the one other thing, when they first told me they were going to name the ship, all I could think about is, oh my gosh, I'm going to get to wear a hat that says USS Travis Mannion. You know, like the old timers that wear the hats with their ships, like, we're going to have those. So I can't wait to put that hat on and get one for you as well.
Oh, I'll be honored. Ryan Mannion, thank you, my friend. We will talk very, very soon. And Ryan, by the way, where can people get your podcast? Because I keep getting people that ask me, where can I listen to Ryan's podcast?
You can listen to it everywhere, streaming on all platforms, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts, you can get it. The Resilient Life, Ryan Mannion.
All right, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks, Rich.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right. Great stuff. Great stuff. And I appreciate you being here today as well. We got a lot more to chat about. We got a ton of audio from Pete Hegseth's confirmation hearing today. TikTok, the potential ban on that. The final report by the obsessed psychopath Jack Smith. about President Donald Trump. We'll talk about that as well. And the question of the latest war on food that New York City is doing in the name of climate change. We'll talk to the guy who is the head of Junior's Cheesecake in New York and why these new rules are absolutely ridiculous. So big show still to come. We're just getting warmed up. Don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.